How is everyone doing? This is the From the Rumble Seat podcast. My name is Tyler Duke, and today I'm joined with Kiefer. How you doing, Kiefer?
Doing all right.
And we have Joey. He's back. How was your trip, Joey?
It was awesome, man. If anybody didn't make that trip to Ireland and has never been, but you're looking for like an international vacation spot, I would definitely recommend it. That place is pretty sweet.
Yeah, I've always wanted to go over there, especially to play golf. It's the main thing. And I think Chow played golf when he was over there, had a picture of his ball right up against the face of a bunker. So that was pretty funny. So yeah, I'm sure it was a blast. But glad to have you here, get another person in on the podcast. And this is our second one, as last week we did it before the Mercer game, and here we are. We're 2-0 after an acceptable win against Mercer, I think I'd call it. You know, comfortable in the second half for the most part. You know, had backups in with no problem. And after we saw what happened to, you know, Georgia and Clemson last week, it made it feel maybe better than we should have, with a 25-point win because of how much they struggled. We'll just get some opening thoughts on the game, and we can start with you, Joey, on how you thought the team played, progress from Boston College, and things like that.
Yeah, I was a little frustrated up front. It felt like it took them a little while to kind of get control. I think they scored right before halftime to go up, was it 21-7?
Yep.
And that was about the time when I started to kind of, I think, first of all, they put together like a scoring drive with only about a minute and 40 to go when they got the ball back. That was good to see. A couple big plays from, I think, Quay and Clinton Lynch. But it took him a little while to get control. But overall, I was happy with the outcome. 5 touchdowns on 8 drives, and it easily could have been 7-on-8 if they had cut out a couple of turnovers deep in drives. But offense, I thought, was reasonably good. Kiefer will know a lot more about like X's and O's and such of how the blocking went and who's hitting assignments and such. But the defense concerned me a little bit, and I think we'll probably get into that here in a little bit. But like you said, I mean, I think acceptable is probably a good word to describe it. It wasn't anything catastrophic, but it wasn't anything highly confidence-inspiring either, I would say.
Yeah, and at 35-10, you would think with that score that you would be more disappointed with the offense maybe before the game started. And to me, it was exactly the opposite because, like you said, for the offense for the most part, except for the 2 fumbles, they moved the ball consistently, scored on most of their possessions, punted 1 time. But because of the defense, which somehow only gave up 10 points, but, you know, the time of possession was even, and that was something that Johnson was not happy with after the game and made a quote saying, you know, when we move the ball like that offensively and we only punt 1 time, it's not acceptable to be 30. Basically, it was 30 minutes on time of possession, so he was unhappy with that. And Kiefer, what about you? I know you were looking for some things defensively, which I'm pretty sure we didn't get to see.
Yeah, I was looking for the 2 main things I talked about last week. I was looking for execution on the offensive side of the football, and then personnel management on the defensive side of the football. And I actually think I saw both of those things. Offensive execution was pretty good. The offensive line, I thought, blocked well. I didn't really get to rewatch as well as I thought I was going to, unfortunately. One of the things that confused me was how very little B-back push we got, despite the fact that Freddie Burden absolutely destroyed the nose tackle in every play. So that was a little bit perplexing, and it's something I want to go back and look at. The perimeter blocking by the A-backs was hit or miss.
Yep.
But you know, overall, I can't complain too much about how the offense played outside of the fumbles and the drop pitch that killed that drive. So that pretty pleased with. The defense, yet again, the scheme just annoys me. The lack of adjustment to the screen, everyone saw that, and it was very frustrating. And just they were giving up everything underneath, which was exactly within Mercer's game plan. Yes, they only give up 10 points, but that's not going to work against a team that can make you pay. So I'm hoping to see against Vanderbilt a little bit more aggression. Okay, maybe you can give them a pass on it's Mercer, So we're going to just contain them and not worry about being aggressive. But to me, that's the game you want to be aggressive. So for this week, I'm looking for a little bit more aggression out of the defense, as I seem to be looking for that every week. But I was very pleased with the personnel at defensive tackle specifically being rotated in. And so I got that out of it at least.
Yeah, and we'll talk about those guys more a little bit later. But and yeah, the aggression, and it's just frustrating for me because you think with the style of offense that Tech plays, aggression makes sense. You know, if they score in, you know, four plays, all right, well, the offense gets to back go back out there against the tired defense and, you know, hopefully have a death march again. Whereas when you're going on these, you know, the bend don't break, which I loved hearing Johnson actually had a quote on that, because we've always, you know, kind of mockingly said the bend don't break defense. And, yeah, Johnson post-game said, you know, this bend don't break isn't working. So hopefully that's going to be something they continue to look at. And, you know, against Vanderbilt, it's not as much of a worry. But Clemson will, you know, they can screen you to death too. So, you know, with Clemson running some of the plays that Mercer was with their personnel could really, really kill us, despite how Clemson hasn't looked very good so far. We will move to one question right now, since it just kind of goes into what we're about to go to, and it's from Triple B, Boo Boo Boo. What to think of Vanderbilt? Says, given South Carolina's looked so bad and Middle Tennessee State put up 500 yards of offense on them, and then he says, who is Vanderbilt? Kiefer, you watched the entire Middle Tennessee State game. I watched some of South Carolina, and it's basically the Ralph Webb show. And offensively, so you know what you see in the Middle Tennessee State game. You can start on offense, but maybe especially defensively, considering, you know, that's supposed to be kind of a strength for them with, you know, Zach Cunningham at linebacker, but the Blue Raiders moved the ball as much as they wanted, basically.
Yeah, so offensively, Vanderbilt's very one-dimensional. It is, as you said, it's the Webb show. He got most of the carries except for in goal line situations. They brought in the other guy, name's slipping my mind. Blossom game. But he's a good running back. He's every bit as good as Hillman was for BC. But he's a little different. He's definitely someone you need to contain. You don't want to get him a hole to where he can get going, because he's very hard to get down, and you don't want to let him bounce it outside, because he hurdled multiple MTSU defenders on the edge and got some big gains out there once MTSU started to wear down on defense. So That's the big thing. The passing game doesn't scare me really with them. The quarterback missed several open throws that I saw throughout the game, and he did it against South Carolina as well. So as long as we just contain Webb, I'm not really worried about their passing attack getting too crazy. So I'm hoping to see maybe a little bit of man coverage, a little bit of letting the linebackers get after Webb. But I think the biggest issue we're going to have is on there with the defensive side of the ball with them. I was surprised by how many tackles they missed against MTSU, however. MTSU has this running back, I think, that transferred from Ole Miss, and he was slipping out of a tackle, it seemed like, every single play. I expected more out of a defense coached by Derek Mason. He's a well-respected defensive coach. He's had less than stellar head coaching career so far, but I expected more out of that defense. They were usually there in the run game, but they had trouble bringing them down. The other thing is Vandy's coverage is highly reminiscent of our own in that it's soft and doesn't work. That's something we may be able to exploit with the ABACs. They're going to give a cushion to the outside wide receivers, so we're not going to really be able to beat them over the top. But sneaking the ABACs out and having them sit in the soft zone, I think that's going to be there all day.
Yeah, and you know, maybe some quick passes, quick, you know, curls and stuff like that. And that might work for the receivers anyway. And we can talk about this later too with June and Stewart. Kind of showing it's not going to be the over-the-top, you know, big pass plays. But at the same time with June, what we've seen with the body control and stuff, very, very good possession receiver and running some great routes. So yeah, some of the shorter stuff with the soft zone may work. And, yeah, it's hard to get a good look at their defense in the Middle Tennessee State game, because they threw the ball 65 times for 400 yards. So it was definitely a different type of offensive attack whereas they only ran it 21 times for pretty good success, 96 yards. So, yeah, the really thing with Vanderbilt is I'm going to be looking at Zach Cunningham, like I said, a lot. He's a, you know, All-American type caliber linebacker in the middle for them, and definitely a guy that they need to contain, as we've seen in the past, that, you know, star players, especially linebackers on defenses, can kind of blow up what Tech is doing a lot of the time. So he's a guy to look at. And then, yeah, this is a perfect game for the defense to get aggressive with, you know, the style of offense they run. Shermer, their quarterback, has been not very good. No big mistakes, but nothing that scares you in terms of, you know, throwing over our heads or anything. So if you can stop Webb, a little bit like Boston College, except I don't know if I can say this, but I got had Vanderbilt people in my mentions on Twitter because I made a comment in my 1,300-word recap last week on the game that Vanderbilt's offense was weak, or fairly weak, and I had Vanderbilt fans that somehow found that and retweeted it and were in my mentions about their offense. So I was going to say I don't think their offense, other than Webb, is, you know, any scarier than Boston College's. Anything to add to that, Joey, on Vanderbilt? I know you didn't watch Middle Tennessee State, I don't think, that game.
Well, yeah, you're right. I haven't actually watched any Vanderbilt myself so far this year. But first of all, I was going to say, as much as we talk about Vanderbilt not really, like, fitting in with the rest of the SEC, their fans have this whole, like, vitriol thing very much, like, on lockdown. Like, I still have a screenshot on my computer of a fan who created a Twitter account specifically to tell me that I was an inferior journalist after I said something about, like, Bryce Drew would not go to Vanderbilt over Georgia Tech. Like,
yeah.
Like, give me a break. So the thing that gives me confidence going into this game, knowing particularly kind of the style of offense that Vanderbilt's going to want to play, of run the ball between the tackles, and that'll be like the basis of what they want to do. The thing that gives me confidence against that is what we've seen the last few years from Georgia Tech going up against some of these more one-dimensional offenses. Is if they decide that they want to sell out to stop the run and force teams to beat them passing, they can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we saw the Florida State game last year. As many weapons they had on the outside, Everett Golson wasn't lighting anybody up with his arm, and Georgia Tech held Dalvin Cook to only around 100 yards. A couple years ago in the Georgia game, Nick Chubb ran for like 110 yards in the first half and like 15 yards in the second half.
Yeah, and that's, I always worry more about the QBs that spread it out a lot. And that's even what Mercer did with, you know, spreading it out and getting it out quick, and it was keeping, you know, the defense, you know, on their toes. And I want to get a little more into that now real quick, just the defense with the screens, and ask for one of your opinions on it, because what worried me after the game was when they had some defensive players come in and do interviews. It was P.J. Davis. I can't remember who else came. Chase Alford was in there because of his punt run. And just what the defensive players were kind of saying was they completely 100% knew that was what Mercer was going to do offensively, was the screen game, and that it wasn't any kind of surprise. So that was just... And I know, Joey, you mentioned it. I saw you tweet this on Twitter, and I'll ask your opinion on it, that you were like, this is a coaching problem. This isn't a personnel. It's, you know, these guys aren't in the right position and aren't, you know, kind of trained and coached to be where they need to be against this type of offense. And that's preparation and scheme problem. So what do you see with that, and do you feel that's kind of an issue going forward with the defense?
Yeah, I mean, and really what, I guess what brought me to that conclusion was watching that Mercer coming right out of halftime, you know, kick the ball off, they get the ball on their 25-yard line, they proceed to go on a 17-play drive, convert three third downs, and they converted another fourth down. And meanwhile, they did so, of those 17 plays, like at least like six of them were screen passes. Like, knew exactly what was happening, and it just kept happening over and over and over. And basically where I went with it in my mind was like, I've spent years of this Paul Johnson tenure very confused as to like why the defense isn't more effective, you know, because I feel like talent wise, they're fine. Like, I feel like they're getting plenty of good guys and guys that they want and things like this. So it's kind of perplexing that they haven't been any better than they have been. And watching that drive, it just became immediately apparent to me that it's like, any shortcomings that this defense has, it's probably not a talent thing as much as it's a coaching issue. It's a scheme issue. It's, you know, it's playing kind of this conservative style that, you know, it seems kind of average at best. And so that was really frustrating for me to watch. And I think that's kind of my big takeaway is any defensive issues are probably coaching related more than talent.
Yeah. And I guess to me, this next game is a big answer because, you know, the argument you can make is that Roof doesn't want to, you know, do anything special and get too aggressive against Mercer. But at the same time, you know, when you're not dominating them, you need to do what you can to put your guys in the right place. So against Vanderbilt, if we continue to see this just very vanilla, a lot of soft zone and stuff like that, it's going to be frustrating. And Johnson was frustrated. So that's why I think we hopefully will see a change because he was not happy at all. And you can always tell when that happens because he'll get questions about the offense post-game from people. And he's kind of like – and he said this on Saturday. He was just like, well, you know, we ran for however many yards – punted one time, blah, blah, blah. You know, what else are we supposed to do? And that's when you kind of realize or you see that he's not happy with the defense. Kiefer, what did you see from kind of an X's and O's standpoint with just what the coverage was and then why guys weren't getting up to the line quicker?
Yeah, well, to me, the defensive line was really getting sucked in on a lot of the plays. So that baffled me. If they knew it was coming, why are you continuing to get sucked in on the draw plays? That tells me there's a coaching issue. When you're running a bunch of screens and you have a man-covered system, you should probably put a man out on the backs and the guys that are leaking out. You know, and even the coaches said they were running a lot of man, but the men weren't getting out there. Well, why aren't they in position in man coverage to sniff out a screen? And they knew it was coming. That baffles me. I don't really have an answer. I really don't. I've been watching Ted Roof defenses for probably the fourth season now, and I still don't have an answer for some of the stuff that goes on. And if it doesn't improve, if Vanderbilt's able to run screens all day with Webb, we'll lose.
Oh, yeah.
We will lose the game.
Because, you know, much more talented running back and better blockers in general. Yeah, and you made a good point about the linemen, and it seemed like finally in the – you know, late in the third quarter, in the fourth quarter, some of the defensive ends were kind of staying outside. And I forget who it was. There was one end that actually almost picked off one of the screens. Y'all remember who that was? It was in Tech territory there towards the end of the game. Kind of popped outside on a screen and almost and picked it off right in front of him. Don't remember who it was, but it was like, you know, looked over to my left. I was like, finally, one of the defensive linemen sniffed that out. So, yeah, definitely there's just some cause for concern, and let's hope that they get more aggressive against Vanderbilt, and I'm thinking they might. And we'll get into some more questions now that are more a little random. We'll start with the first one from GT Fenton, and he mentioned speed of play development. Does it seem like plays have been developing slower with Justin Thomas at the helm versus what we saw with Jordan and Marshall? He said, with respect to Jordan, part of him, maybe he was calling his own number and getting upfield. And with Marshall, Mercer totally given in and gone through the motions. He said, does it just seem like Justin is playing out of rhythm? Is he overthinking the plays, or do you think he's making reads slower than in the past? And either one of you want to jump on that one?
I can jump on that one. I don't really see too – I don't think Justin's making the reads a whole lot slower. Now, Jordan was definitely making the – he was making a couple reads slower, but he also – there were a lot of plays where he wasn't even reading. Those goal line situations, they would, it kind of looked like the progression of a midline, but they would block everyone up and then they'd just call a follow. He wasn't being asked to do a bunch at all. I mean, they didn't even ask him to pass. He was asked to get downhill and bleed the clock and get out of there. So there were a few inside veers that I saw Jordan run, and he was hesitant to pitch, and I think that was definitely a knock on him. He was hesitant to pitch. But they were also kind of I think that something Mercer did that could affect the speed of the reads was in several situations they were kind of playing patty cake in the middle between the two reads. They were trying to cut off, especially out on the pitch, they were trying to cut off the pitch, and they were trying to force Jordan to get upfield and run back to where there was help because they knew they weren't going to be able to get the A-backs on the edge with their superior speed. So more talented defense isn't going to try that, and hopefully against the more talented defense we aren't playing Matthew Jordan this season. So I'm not at all that concerned about it. I think Justin still makes his reads at a regular speed given a regular defense and the way a normal defense is going to be playing us. So I don't feel concerned at all about read speed.
Yeah, and Johnson even commented on Jordan that he basically told him to just get downhill quickly after the read. So that was definitely a scheme thing. And just in general, you know, Justin's running more complex plays, you know, hesitation, you know, trap options and stuff like that. So that's why it may appear slower. With Rizzo, he did make some bad reads, and actually you could see him get frustrated quite a few times against Mercer where he gave the ball to the B-back and clapped. There was one play in Mercer territory where if he pulled it, it might have been a touchdown pretty early in that game. And he clapped his hands, think it might have even been on a third down, pretty frustrated. So, yeah, he could definitely make some better reads, and that's something that will, to me, probably get better as the season goes along and starts reading that a little easier. We'll go to AOT, Atlanta's original team. It says, why does it seem that our receivers are having trouble getting separation? What can we do to improve this? The problem is not as bad as last year, but this needs to get better for the whole offense to improve. Go to you, Joey, on that one.
This is pretty much straight up an athleticism issue, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't think that Ricky June is blowing anybody away with his speed and athleticism. Whereas you saw guys like, you know, DeAndre Smelter and Darren Waller and Stephen Hill and Demaryius Thomas and so on and so forth. I mean, these guys could run past defenders. And you're just not going to get that from Ricky June. We've known that that's not something you're going to get from Brad Stewart, guys like this. So I think that's the big thing. But ultimately, that's also not going to keep anybody from, you know, being completely ineffective, with especially guys like June, who we've seen start to use his body very well. He's, you know, every bit 6'3", 6'4", where he's able to kind of use that size advantage to be a very effective receiver in one-on-one coverage. And so this is something that has been kind of an ongoing issue for the last couple of years, I think, since Smelter and Waller left. And I don't think it's anything you're going to see really improve until guys like Jair Hawkins-Anderson are ready to come on the field and run away with some athleticism. But I think that's ultimately kind of what you're talking about being the issue here.
Yeah, and I completely agree there. And I do wish we had a burner maybe on the opposite side of June, because it would be a really nice combo to have that. Because to me, they're pretty similar receivers in what they do, but. Yeah, I don't think it hurts anything, because the thing with June, even he doesn't really have to get by anybody. If he's deep one-on-one with the corner, I think he's winning most of those battles, and we've seen that already with how big he is. His body's got great hands. I mean, he made some incredible catches just against Mercer where he was in traffic. So, you know, I don't think it's going to hurt him a whole lot. And you've got some A-backs who can get upfield quickly, obviously, with Searcy. So, you know, run him on a streak up the middle, and, you know, you can kind of take that there, and you've got the outside a little more open for them. So I don't think it's a huge problem, and I've actually liked the passing game a lot so far. Unless you have anything to add there, Keith, or we'll go to the next one.
No, I think y'all nailed it.
Yeah. Here's one from Chili Dog Rings, FO. A-back movement giving away the play. This seemed to be a particular point Mr. Groh kept making in his excellent coverage of the Mercer game. How true is this, and if so, what can we do to fix it? I didn't see it on TV, so I don't know exactly what Groh was saying or follow that one a whole lot. If one of you saw that, you can comment on it.
Yeah, well, I would like to take this time to remind everyone about the Middle Tennessee game and how Groh ruined that for us. But
I thought we agreed to never talk about that game again.
Well, it was one of the worst experiences of my undergraduate career. So, well, you know, Paul Johnson runs a ton of plays off his different motions. And against Mercer, the one thing Groh did get right in his commentary was that Mercer wasn't really responding to our overloads very well. So there was really no need to be fancy, disguise anything, or run a bunch of different plays. We lined up, Mercer didn't respond properly, and we had successful plays. There's not a whole lot more to that. You know, that jet motion, we don't run that nearly as much against most other teams, and we usually do either run the load option or we'll pass or we'll run a trap or something. But with the outer motion, we run half our offense off that. You know, with several different series, the entire inside veer series is based off that. So I really wouldn't be concerned about that giving anything away. There are plenty of plays you can run off both of those motions. And, you know, if teams start to expect something, then you best believe Paul Johnson's been doing this long enough to where he'll come up with something to counter off of it. So don't worry about that.
Yeah, I agree with you there on, you know, Johnson's good at that. He will use the A-back to fool people if they're getting too, you know, aggressive toward, you know, some movement, meaning a certain type of play. So, yeah, I won't be concerned about that yet at any point unless we see some more info. The next question.
Real quick, just to add on to that, the one thing that I think Gross said that he was pretty accurate about as far as what I've seen this offense for the last several years is when these A-backs run this flat motion, basically, and they just shift to the other side of the formation and they end up out in the slot, basically creating almost like a trips formation of sorts, that's a pretty clear indicator that Georgia Tech's about to pass the ball, because I have a hard time remembering seeing them do that in a situation where then they ran the ball, unless it was just like a quarterback draw or a scramble or something like that. Usually that's like 9 out of 10 times that's a pass play.
Yeah.
Right. Go ahead.
I was going to say that's about the only predictable aspect of the motion. Otherwise, I mean, you guys are spot on that they'll kill him with misdirection and counter and other stuff if defenses really start cheating toward the motion side.
Yeah, right. And they do that, and when they go out and they end up sitting in the formation like that trips formation, absolutely, it's going to be a pass. But when it's in an obvious passing situation, I don't mind it. And a lot of those types of motions are designed to be quick and test whether or not the defense is in man or zone by seeing if they trail. So I wouldn't be worried. Yeah, that's definitely by design.
Next one, I'll just group these two from Yellow Jacket Heritage and Sully GT. Basically asking, Yellow Jacket said, what play do you believe will be utilized more to beat Vandy? So AKA, where are they the weakest? And then Sully says, what matchups should we want to see or avoid in terms of corner receiver in the trenches or individual matchups that will work in Tech's favor and which should Tech avoid? I'll start out just offensively. I think the obvious and the key is Zach Cunningham for an individual matchup. He's a guy that can really single-handedly cause a lot of problems. I'm not sure which side of the field you'd be more concerned about him. I think the V-back dive will be tough against Vandy's front seven. I personally think the perimeter game will be really important against them. And the passing, as we've seen how vulnerable they are to the pass, and Kiefer, you mentioned the soft zone that you've seen them in a lot. So hopefully a lot of, you know, quick curls and then comebacks from June on the outside can work. And just in general, I think in the perimeter, I don't see Vanderbilt as that fast of a defense, but they're pretty stout up the middle, it seems like. So that's what I'll be looking at, and one of you can chime in.
I think the thing that I'm curious to see, you know, Kiefer, you talked about them using a lot of soft zone, especially against like Middle Tennessee State. I'm curious to see if they walk the corners up a little closer to the receivers, trying to contain the rushing attack, but also then, you know, having an effect on, you know, does it work to go long? Does it, you know, you still going for more comeback routes? It's going to kind of affect what they do on the outside. I don't know if I see the corners giving, you know, 7-8 yards of cushion, knowing that you might have, you know, rocket tosses going into the perimeter and things like this. So I agree, though, that stuff on the perimeter is going to be absolutely paramount to the offensive success this week.
All right, and next we'll go to an interesting question from Intrect, and it says, gun to your head, does this team win 8 games or more? I'll start out, and it's tough for me right now, just from what we've seen, just trying to gauge how this team is. I believe that Tech will win on Saturday. So at 3-0, I think 8-4 is kind of a reasonable record at what I think they might end up at. You still have Virginia. You still have Georgia Southern. So, you know, those are two games that you should win. And, you know, and then you have a lot of games that are, you know, iffy with, like, Miami, Virginia Tech, you know, North Carolina, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh looks pretty good so far. So that was a game I felt a lot better with before the season. And I know, Joey, you were already worried about it before the season started. And now through two games, Pittsburgh's looked pretty good. But with Southern and Virginia, those are two games I think they should win no matter what. Duke doesn't look very good so far. So you have, you know, if you can, you want to say Clemson's a loss, if you want to say, you know, at Georgia's a loss, I think there's enough opportunities to get to 8 wins. So right now, with a win against Vanderbilt, I think the 8-4 will be the final record personally. Joey, what do you think there?
I think my question is if you're giving me a bowl game or not to get to 8 wins.
I'm saying 8-4 regular season with a Vanderbilt win, but
I don't.
So yeah, that's without bowl.
I don't think that 8 wins is best case. I think best case is probably 9, maybe 10.
Mm-hmm.
But I think 8 is like good case.
Yeah.
I think the reasonable floor of expectation, if you get to 3-0, you beat Vanderbilt. The reasonable floor of expectation is probably 7 wins.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm with you that like I don't know exactly how to gauge what we've seen so far and use that to like alter my expectations moving forward. I'm really curious to see what this team does on Saturday.
Key for you, 8-4, gun to your head, yes or no?
Well, the team that I saw play Mercer on Saturday would not win 8 wins. But the good news is teams change and evolve and things happen and people improve over the course of the entire season. You know, after 2 wins last year, who would have laughed if you were told that that team was going to go 3-9? I would have laughed if someone told me that team was going to go 3-9.
Yeah.
After the first two games where we struggled against Wofford and Tulane in 2014, if you told me that team was going to win the Orange Bowl, I would have laughed at you. So the last 2 years, more than anything, have taught me that, you know, my guesses are worthless. So based on the Mercer game, that team that played on that field that day will not win 8 wins. But I don't think that's the same team we're going to see all year. So I think it's possible.
Yeah, for me, you know, just right now, I'm saying yes, the gun's in my head. And that's really just because I look at the schedule and I see, you know, to me right now, I see five pretty certain wins. And I think, and then I add Duke. From what we, again, it's still early, but from what we saw with Duke against Wake, that team's lost quite a bit.
By the way,
Duke
is also the homecoming game, so I don't. There's just nothing that makes me think so far that Duke is going to walk into Atlanta and win the homecoming game. Just no.
Yeah,
no
it's
way.
it's not the situation like we've seen in the past where Duke's like this fall break a game that where nobody's there and it's, you know, that sleeping game at noon. So it should be a good crowd and they should be energized for it. So that, and then you look and it's like two or three wins out of Clemson, Miami, Pittsburgh, UNC, Virginia Tech, Georgia. And, you know, again, obviously last year that didn't work out, but right now I think they could get there. And then we'll just do one more question. Which one do we want to go with? We'll do two, just a quick one real quick. Do you think Clemson will get their offensive issues worked out before their trip to Bobby Dodd? That's from Goldfella. Clemson faces South Carolina State this week. So, you know, even if they could score 70 points, but I think they're still some room for optimism if you're a Tech fan just from what you've seen so far and then with their struggles, because if they just kill South Carolina State, that's still a really bad team, so it shouldn't make anybody get really worried. But you know, on the defense is a whole nother issue with that game, but offensively right now, it's, you know, I've liked what I've seen as a Tech fan, that they haven't found any type of rhythm. Either one of you did you get a chance to see Clemson at all?
I didn't see him too much, but from what I saw and from what I'm hearing, it seems like their issues are how a lot of do across the line of scrimmage on offense. And I've also heard that the fans are a little bit frustrated with how the play calling's gone. And both of those things can be cleaned up, but it's not that far away. It's going to be 11 days from Saturday. So I don't think they're going to have them cleaned up completely, but I expect to get a better shot than Troy did. That's kind of where I stand on that issue.
I personally, being in Ireland, did not get to see the Auburn game, but I went back and rewatched the first half of the Troy game, and I think what I've heard other people say about the Auburn game sounds like it was a little bit the same thing, where I think this is hugely like a mental issue for that offense. They came out in that Troy game, the first half, they were just flat on offense. They had nothing. They did not look excited. They didn't look like they wanted to be there. It was kind of one of these, like, it looked like they were on like the back half of a two-a-day in August, and it was just hot, and they were just dragging. And then also, like you said, Kiefer, the offensive line was not very inspiring. So I don't know if that's something they can fix, you know, in an 11-day span. And that said, I don't know that I would feel a whole lot better about Georgia Tech's chances there, just because the defense has looked good, and so that might end up being kind of a low-scoring game. But yeah, Clemson has not been what we've expected so far, not at all.
Yeah, and next Thursday will definitely be interesting. Hopefully, both teams 3-0 for that Thursday night game. So, and it's in Atlanta, so you just never know what's going to happen when the Tigers come to Atlanta. And we'll do one final question, and this is also Goldfella. We haven't talked too much about it, so that's why we'll do this one. It's, how optimistic are you about the play of the offensive line, specifically run blocking, and improvement in perimeter blocking by ABs and wide receivers after watching the first two games? Is there any substantial improvement since last year? I tried to keep an eye a lot on the offensive line on Saturday when I was there, and Freddie Burden was fantastic. And you mentioned that, Kiefer. But I still didn't like a lot what I saw. And they talked, Burden talked a lot about it post-game, and Johnson, that they're just still not getting to the next level enough. They're not getting one guy down and then and getting upfield and getting another block. And that's why you didn't see big plays, really. You saw very few big plays, which is something you see more often usually when Tech faces kind of a cupcake. They'll kind of explode some runs. That didn't happen much on Saturday, and that's why it was a little lower scoring and a lot of long drives. And yeah, they're just not getting the next level. For the most part, the first blocks were fine, and that's why they were able to move the ball, but not enough offensive linemen getting upfield. And for the A-backs, okay. There were a few. I noticed Ike Willis missed a pretty big block on the outside on one play where I think it was Searcy could have possibly taken it all the way. So still some missed blocks that you want to see improve, but you know, they were okay, they were fine. But I don't think Johnson was at all satisfied, especially with the A-backs on the perimeter. Because even, we mentioned Searcy's long run from, like, the own 5-yard line there right before the half that kind of got that drive moving quickly. And he was mad that he wasn't able to score, apparently, because not enough guys got upfield and finished off the secondary. So both of you can go ahead and finish off on that one. Kiefer, you can go first.
Yeah, I thought it was a little bit better. There's certainly been an improvement from game one to game two. I thought the tackles did an okay job of getting to the linebacker on a couple plays, but I think the issues that we've seen getting to the second level are in the interior. And we've seen teams make a special, especially Boston College, a special effort to keep Burden and the guards off of the linebackers, and that's been evident. But they got to find a way around it. Shamir, I think, had a few times when he was just not able to get to the second level and get his man. And Burden had a few where he was very, very close but didn't quite make it. But what I did like was I felt that the tackles were doing a little bit better job of getting upfield and getting their man. And I think that led to us, you know, we weren't getting the big plays because we weren't cutting off the backside guys at the linebacker and the secondary level. But we were getting intermediate, respectable 10, 12-yard runs because we were stealing off that first linebacker. And that's a big improvement from last year. Last year we saw they weren't getting any of them. Then the front side guy was making the play for a 2-yard gain, as opposed to we were getting 5 to 12 yards when we do get that first linebacker. So I was very encouraged by that, and we've already talked about how good the pass blocking has been compared to last year. So offensive line has been better. The perimeter A black blocking needs to get a little bit better too, but they've got time, and a lot of those guys are still pretty fresh.
biggest thing that I've seen on the perimeter, the only thing that I have to add here really is I think that the A-backs are doing a good job of getting to their man and getting a block on them, but the blocks aren't being finished, so to speak, and that the guys aren't going to the ground. So they're kind of able to recover, and it's better than just not blocking them at all. But like if you think about the Dedrick Mills touchdown at the end of the Boston College game, J.J. Green, who I think has done a lot of this, you know, of good but not great blocking, is gets out, hits his man, but doesn't get him to the ground, and so he's able to recover. And now instead of like a 3-yard gain, you're getting a 6-yard gain, but you're also not getting like a 20-yard gain. And so I think that's really the next step and kind of what will bring the whole thing together on the perimeter is if those guys are able to get the defenders on the ground a little more.
All right, and that is all we have for this Week 2 podcast. Kiefer and Joey, thanks for joining me.
No problem.
Good to be back with you guys.
It's been fun, and thank you to all the From the Rumble Seat commenters for giving us some good questions this week. So hopefully a victory on Saturday against Vanderbilt, and maybe we'll see some of the things we're looking for, especially defensively, with a little more aggression and a win that maybe makes us feel optimistic as we go into Clemson on next Thursday night for what could be a pretty fun undefeated battle and a whiteout at the Flats. So that's it. Thanks to everybody for listening, and have a good one.